Hello and welcome to episode 50 of L&D Disrupt Live. To celebrate, I was joined by the brilliant Egla Vinaskaita to talk about AI in L&D. The buzz around AI for L&D has never been higher, but the conversation is too often surface level and dominated by gimmicky ideas. So Egla joined me to go beyond the buzzword and really dive into the challenges and practicalities of using AI in practice. We spoke about things like why organizational context is so crucial for AI and learning to work together, the need to understand the wider environment, including culture, motivation, and the drivers of change, the ethics of using AI for learning and why we need to consider privacy and bias a part of that, and whether more information means better decision-making. A reminder that you might be listening to this episode and not subscribed. So if you like what you're hearing, please do hit the subscribe button as we continue to grow the show. And we've got some brilliant guests coming up to tackle some big topics in the coming weeks and months. But that's it from me. So I'll leave you to enjoy this conversation with Egla Vinaskaita. Egla, tell us a bit about who you are, what it is that you do, and why you're so passionate about this topic of AI and L&D.
Hi, everyone. I am a learning strategist and advisor. My background is in adult development and learning science and behavioral science. And I usually work with two types of clients. One is I work with vendors and edtech startups, and I advise them on creating learning products. And I also work with organizations on creating scalable upskilling programs. So my niche is and has always been, how do we use technology in a deliberate, intelligent way to support learning? And I've worked with all sorts of technologies, from your usual course website app to VR in the metaverse. And late last year, generative AI came about, as we all know. And although AI had been part of the tech landscape for a long time, it seemed like this time it's going to be different. And that happened for a few reasons. The first thing is that this massive qualitative improvement happened with GPT 3.5. And I think many of you will agree that from the first time we all used it, it was awe-inspiring. Like, the output was really something different from anything we've seen before. So that's the first thing. The second thing is how accessible and easy to use the interface was. And that had two implications. First, it meant that it spread like wildfire. Adoption was lightning fast. So that was immediately became part of the conversation across technology, business, and all landscapes. And the other thing is that I firmly believe that this UI is going to redefine our expectations from technology in terms of what we expect from any technology, including learning technology, in terms of how we access things, the speed, the accuracy, the context of the output that we expect. So that's this huge thing that's happening. So suddenly, AI went from being this fun little thing to an actually useful tool with this potential to actually cut the time from idea to execution by an order of magnitude. So my ears naturally perked up. And it was clear that this technology would have massive implications for our industry and for learning in general. Because if you think about it, a lot of what we do in learning design is ideas, it's content, and it's practice. And generative AI has this massive impact across all three. And the better it gets, and the better we get at using it, the higher up the learning strategy ladder it goes. So to wrap it up, AI affects a whole host of things across learning. So first is how we produce content. Second is the perceived value of content creation. So how our employers, our clients, and any people where money exchanges hands and value is created, how they perceive the value of content creation. Then we have this need for skills to add value, to continue adding value in this industry, and what those skills are. Then our workflows, starting from ideation or sometimes even user research and data analysis, our toolbox to create impactful moments of practice, skills intelligence, which affects both the targeting of content and eventually sometime in the future, potentially targeting of opportunity. So that's within L&D. And then if we go outside, It affects the skills, expectations, dynamics, and job market. And the L&D has a huge part to play on that side as well in helping address that. So it's a pretty wholesale change if you think about it bit by bit. So it seemed worth the time to look into it.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I think it's good that you mentioned words like value, also talking about maybe the wider business, because we're going to really get into those topics throughout the course of the conversation. And the first one is, I hope you don't mind, I'm going to quote you back to you, which is sometimes weird, Egla, but you put this so perfectly that I won't paraphrase it. And I want to talk to you about organizational context, because so many things, for them to work in a business, they have to be aware of the context and applied in context. And you said that using AI for the sake of it, without a clear why, won't necessarily enhance your learning experience or its production process. In fact, if done haphazardly, it might disrupt your workflows and your output entirely. So yeah, tell us about this role of context and maybe what those pitfalls are of using AI without context and the disruption that could cause.
Yeah, so, and I realized this from experience, because when ChatGPT first came about and I started playing around with it, I obviously started, like all of us, looking deeply into what it can do, what kind of problems it's suitable to help us solve, the technology behind it, the technical considerations. And then I paired it up with my knowledge of learning, how people learn and which parts of that process can AI assist with and perhaps even improve on. And you've probably seen this yourself, all of you. Right now, there is a bunch of learning gaps on these AI repositories. And these apps can do all sorts of things. It can help you create content. It can help you curate content, explain things to you, tutor you, give feedback to you in real time. And even if we think about enterprise applications, they're pretty good, albeit right now theoretical applications, such as supporting performance in the flow of work. This promise, the holy grail, finally, with company-specific information in an instant for a single search query. So that was very exciting. So all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, I started pinging a few people working in internal L&D to start speaking about what this is going to mean. And I got a reality check, because a lot of what was coming back to me was pretty much, yeah, no, this is exciting, but we cannot use it. And there were many reasons for it. One being that our content is mostly internal, and therefore we cannot use ChatGPT for privacy reasons. We cannot use data analysis because we don't have any data infrastructure to speak of. Our company culture is very risk averse, very conservative. The use of AI is getting blocked at every level. So this is not going to happen in months. We're talking years. So all in all, the cold, hard reality was that organizations either weren't ready for such rapid change, or they required a much greater level of sophistication in terms of security, in terms of functionality, in terms of integrations, than the early wave of AI learning apps could offer. So that's why we can't talk only about AI in learning. We have to talk about AI learning and the organizational context. Because let me give you an example, a chatbot for learning, which is a pretty common use case that people think of. And on the surface, it's fairly straightforward. I ask you a question, not you, the chatbot. Oh my God. I ask it a question. It gives me an answer. And perhaps it explains things to me. Perhaps I can pester it a bit more and get a bit more nuance in my understanding. The UI is easy and familiar. It probably takes much less time and is much more effective than me taking a course, a static course on the subject. So what's not to lie? All seems good. However, on the flip side, what if there is an internal company procedure that is required for me to be able to perform that skill? Could the chatbot get access to it? And a lot of the times, the answer has been no. So the content stays generic. And yeah, you can say, okay, we can live with that. It's still useful. But can we live with the fact that each user gets an answer that's just a little bit different? And we don't know exactly what they got. And there is a very real chance that at some point they're going to get an answer that is really quite weird. So is your organization comfortable with this ambiguity? Yeah? Because what if you're using this chatbot for something like career coaching or mental well-being, it's not upskilling, but a bot. So what if a career coaching bot gives you biased guidance in terms of how to support you in your career? Or what if a mental well-being bot gives you advice instead of escalating the problem that you reported to it as per the company procedure? Are you comfortable with this potential legal exposure here? So it all comes down to the fact that some organizations would say that the probability of that happening is minuscule and the benefits are immense. So just give me that bot. And there's another type of organization that would say the probability is intolerable. So that's what I mean by the importance of organizational context.
Yeah, I really like that example because another part of it is consistency on the other end. So the answers might not be consistent. And then also people will be putting in different prompts. So obviously the prompt you put in is going to influence what you get back. And therefore that kind of feeds into something maybe we'll touch on later, but you also have to give the people internally the skill of writing good prompts to get things back. And all this ties into what's the context of our organization? How do our people work? Would our people have maybe the skills to really articulate a good prompt to get the right kind of response as well, I guess?
Yeah. And to add to that, there's also this question of workflows. Because if now your job is not to create content from start to finish, but it is to prompt and then review and then QA, your entire process is different, your sign-off process is different, then how do you, and changing the ways people and organizations work is immensely difficult. So there's that. And then of course, what do you do with this time that you are saving? And then we go back to the value of this whole content production process again.
That point as well of using it for the sake of it really ties in nicely to a post you shared, I think last week, about things you learned from speaking to business leaders about generative AI and what was happening when organizations were adopting AI. So maybe tell us a little bit more about those findings.
So the context for what you're talking about for everyone here is that once I started talking about AI with learning leaders across various organizations, it's not a full caveat. This is not a scientific study. This is a summary of my conversations with a group of 10-15 learning leaders. And a few things came up. One thing was that AI adoption is often driven by the business and not the other way around, which is something that perhaps it's not surprising. However, despite the impact that AI can have in L&D, you would think that there is a lot of sway here. However, what I found out that it's not L&D going out to the business and pushing for it, like give us this AI. It's often some sort of AI council at the top that is deciding on this wholesale company AI strategy and if L&D is going to be part of it and then pulling it in if and when. So that was one interesting finding. Another interesting finding was that quite often the organizations that are heavily experimenting with AI in L&D are the same organizations whose customer-facing products and services that depend on AI. So there is this competitive imperative to adopt it company-wide. And obviously, given these two things together, you wouldn't be surprised that, at least from my findings over the last few months, things are accelerating, so don't quote me on that next month. But at least from my findings over the last few months, very, very few organizations were actually being bold enough to... some are piloting, not very many are actually thinking about how to deploy it wholesale. Yeah, but the finer point you keep making here, I agree with, that are you using AI for the sake of it, or is there a real problem to solve, or are you just throwing it at the wall and seeing if it sticks? Because AI cannot solve learning by itself. It's only but a tool that we have in our toolbox, and it's our creativity and ingenuity and thoughtfulness that's going to determine whether it's useful for learning.
I wonder if you got any sense from those conversations if that fact it was being driven by a real business need or product dependency was just making things like buy-in easier and people seeing it as not a gimmick like we spoke about at the start, but as something that will have true business value because they can see the direct correlation to their performance or the company's performance. Was there any of that sentiment in the conversations?
Yeah. So one thing that I discovered that was quite clear from these conversations. And again, not many organizations are doing this. So the sample of the organizations that I'm referring to here isn't very big. There are only a few, and they're in tech. And imagine that an organization that is offering a service that is now AI enabled, the entire population of employees needs to be able to understand how AI works and adopt it as their own to be able to sell that and live by what the company produces. If you think about products as well, if you're a tech company, the competition here is a fast-moving industry. The competition there is very intense. So if you're now adopting AI in all of your workflows, because all the other tech companies are adopting it as well, obviously there is this strong imperative that everyone up and down needs to know how to use it and work at the pace that AI now enables them to work.
Cool. Yeah, I'd love to hear as well in the chat from anyone who is trying to use or has implemented AI internally. Is it for you that it's connected to a business problem? Have you seen it as part of your product sort of connection and evolution? It'd be really nice to hear any of those insights in the chat. We spoke about the sort of context that's needed, but also if we're taking a more holistic view, we also need the right environment, the right culture. And that comes back to this idea of the motivation to learn. AI will only be effective if we have things like the motivation or the right culture internally for it to be used effectively. And it's not like this silver bullet that is just going to solve all your problems if the foundations aren't there. So yeah, I'd love to hear a bit about motivation. Why is that such an important thing for AI to actually work for companies in learning?
Yeah. Motivation. That's the eternal problem. Not problem, but something that we need to solve every time. I've come to believe that learning design cannot be separate from motivation. Like these two have to go together. You cannot be an ID, an instructional designer, and only care about using correct instructional interactions in a course, even if they're evidence-based and all. You just cannot do that. You have to care about what problem you're solving for someone, what is the most effective remedy to it, and how to persuade them that you've got the value, that you've got the goods, that you're gonna solve the problem for them. So that's the gist of this work. And it remains so even with AI. So if you don't solve for motivation, no technology, not even AI, will be able to help stuff that knowledge and those skills into someone's head. Novelty cannot carry the learning. And you need to earn that cognitive engagement from someone. And I always say that relevance is the ultimate engagement tool. So you cannot, no bells and whistles are going to work unless you nail the relevance bit. And to make learning relevant to someone, you need to think about a few things. So the first one is always understand the person's pain points that you need to help them overcome, or understand the goals that you need to help them reach. So we all know that learning is hard work. There has to be a reason why someone would start learning and persist with learning. So what is that reason? Why would they want to do it? So that's first. The second one is help the person understand their goal, because a lot of the time people do not have this perceived understanding of what it is exactly that they are working towards, what it is exactly that they are trying to achieve. So help them own that goal, help them aspire towards that goal, right? So once we get that sorted, then we come to help them chart a path towards that goal, so that goal seems achievable. And this is actually a very useful, if not essential, part of any learning program design. You need to understand where the person is, what their destination is, and what the path there is. So only then you can communicate to them what their journey is going to be like and how you're going to be able to support them. And finally, okay, I'm convinced, I know that I need this, I start learning, but how do I persist? So you create a scaffold around people to give them support when the going gets tough. For example, do they need an acknowledgement of their progress, a little win so that they feel that they're gaining this mastery? Do they need a helping hand or an outreach at some point so they feel like they're not alone, or whatever it is that they help, that they're stuck with, that there is help coming when they need it? So understanding these things, and these are, as I'm sure you see, that these are very human problems. These are very human experiences. So understanding these things about people and connecting the dots is the human element people keep talking about that's allegedly not going away. So we're going to see about that. But yeah, technology for learning cannot succeed without solving for those things.
Yeah. Part of that as well, the environment issue, is understanding how your business operates, right? Like, what triggers change effectively in your company if we want to use AI in an intentional way? Or what is it that causes action? So what have we seen in the past really inspire people to start adopting a new technology? Is that part of it as well, this more wider understanding of how your company works and how it might use it in practice?
Oh, definitely. If you think about technology adoption, obviously AI is not the first technology. And there are frameworks such as, I think, technology acceptance framework, TAM. I think there's now TAM free. I'm going to be writing about this a bit quite soon. It does give you a better sense. It does give you a framework in terms of what makes technology adoption successful to people. So if you think about it, there are three elements. There is the technology itself, there's the individual, and there's the organization or the context again. So the individual needs to feel not just that they have the skills to use the technology, but that they have the confidence to use it and that they trust this technology. So it's both the skills and the feeling that it's not just I know how to do it, but I know how to select the right context to do it. I know that I'm going to be able to follow through and so on. So there, that's the individual element. When you think about the tech element, it is a function of how good the technology is and how good it is for what problems it's good for and what problems it's probably not that good for. So it is that's where this is the second element where technology is doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And then finally, you have the organizational context, and it is about, is that technology actually relevant to my work? We're going back to relevance again. And does my organization support use of that technology? Because if it's a bit of a so-so, if there's a lot of ambiguity, is this allowed? How can I use it? If there's a lot of ambiguity around that, there is no clear guidance, there is no clear and explicit encouragement from the top that this is now how we work, then people are going to be a bit hesitant to use it.
Yeah, no, I could totally agree. I think you're right. That's a universal thing with basically every tool. I think project management tools, maybe being the biggest one I've seen, unless there's that real clear indication of how it works and everybody's using it consistently from the top down, then it just won't work or be adopted. I wanted to remind people that you can leave any questions or thoughts in the chat, because we've got a few more challenges we want to talk about, and then we will get to the questions in a more dedicated way. The next thing I wanted to talk about, Egla, is the ethics of using AI, which I think is something that gets overlooked in this conversation quite a bit, but you've shared some great content on this. And I'm going to quote you to you for the last time, just to give people the context of what it is I'm talking about here. But you said that AI can give us a glimpse into the currently invisible, but even if we can look, doesn't mean we should. How much of what we look into should we disclose to employees, and should we seek their consent?
Yeah, that's very deep. I would say that I have thankfully seen this whole question of AI ethics at the forefront of most, if not all, discussions about AI and L&D. So that's a good thing. That's a good signal, because if you think about it, people data can potentially unlock some of the most powerful use cases of AI in L&D. But that's also the crux of the issue, that's some of the most sensitive data. So we need to thread carefully here for obvious reasons. And I think it's useful to look at this whole, because there are so many facets to it and so many layers, that it's helpful to look at three things in relation to this AI ethics question, which are related, but they are not quite the same. And they are just considerations that you need to think for and keep in mind as you're adopting AI. So we have privacy, we have bias, and we have this these general higher level questions of ethics. So privacy is probably the most straightforward one to think of, not to solve. So it is about those use cases we want to make to make full use of generative AI. We need to give it access to our internal data, databases, information, employee data, and so on. How do we make sure that that data is safe? So that's privacy. The second one is bias, which is always a bit more tricky to solve because we know that already AI can help create learning pathways. And at some point, if not already, it will be able to uncover hidden opportunities for people in their organizations, career advancement, or moving sideways or whatever. And the question here is, how do we assess people's needs accurately? And how do we ensure that these opportunities are distributed fairly? So that I'm not pigeonholed into a path just because of my previous background and previous experience, and I'm able to expand myself, right? Both for the individual's sake and for the organization itself, so it doesn't overlook the talent that has been already overlooked, even without AI. So that's the first consideration. And then let's remember that, yes, people have their own goals, and AI can show them pathways towards those goals. So that's a benefit. However, organizations also have their own goals and priorities. And it's almost certain that access to this opportunity is going to be limited in some way, is going to be constrained. Because if you think about it, not everyone is going to be able to access to this reskilling or advancement or a training upskilling program that they may want to. So the question here is, if I don't have a chance to do that in my company and there is a limitation on these opportunities, who do these opportunities go to and how do we decide that? And how confident are we in the opacity of any AI engines that help us and facilitate us making those decisions? So that's bias. Like a lot of layers in bias, and it seems like every week there is some other facet that springs up. Yeah, and then we have, as you say, this general ethics question, which goes way beyond L&D, which is, should we have access to should we analyze the data to the full extent that we potentially now have the ability to analyze the data? Should we look at these correlations and how it all comes together and insights? And if we should, then the next question is, do employees have the right to know how their data is being used and how it is affecting their movement across the organization? And then if that's the case, should they have the ability to consent to that? And if they should, then how do we enforce whatever the outcome of that consent is, or lack of? So that's the whole ethical question about, and that's what I meant in that in that post about, should we, if we can, should we?
Yeah. And then I guess it's to illustrate the complexity of this. Then if some people aren't happy with their data being used and some people are, then we come back to the issue of inconsistency and transparency in the availability of opportunities, isn't it? So that's why it's so important to be that mindful of what this means on an individual level, not just how can our business use it, right? And just getting like tunnel vision, I guess, in that sense.
Exactly. I mean, there are massive benefits and people in using that data to support people's career development. Imagine some world in the future where you're interviewing for a job and there is almost a quantified path for you, like being offered in front of you, that this is where you can, based on our previous data and on your background, these are the opportunities for you potentially in the company. So that's a very a much more specific conversation when you're taking a job and deciding on your career options. Obviously, I'm just speaking off the top. But yeah, so there are some really good use cases that would benefit people, but the downside is quite obvious, I think.
Yeah. And maybe I guess one question is, are there some low touch ways people can use this? Because we're, you know, this is sort of 0 to 100, but maybe there's ways you can say, for example, if I'm about to have a performance review with you, I could go to ChatGPT or another tool and say, like, what are the core skills of exposition, or what would be a good framework of development for this role? And therefore, could I learn something from there? See some skills gaps or see some pathways I hadn't thought about before I have that conversation, and therefore I'm not going straight to that point of using the data about someone. Is that,
I think that's where we are right now, roughly, or at least there's technology that is aspiring to do exactly that right now. The question is where it's going, because where we are right now, it's, I think, quite, I don't want to say comfortable, but it's quite reasonable. It's something that we accept that this is right now a net benefit, right? When we think about AI, I think it's important not to think about now, but to think about what's going to happen 3, 6, 12 months from now. This is what all of the conversations, or many of the conversations about bias and these whole bigger ethical questions, they are about not necessarily what we can do now, but what we're going to be able to do in the future.
Yeah, that makes sense. Maybe like thinking as far ahead as you can, and maybe move in with the handbrake on, isn't it, before you get too far ahead.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. Thankfully, a lot of people are thinking about it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem that there's a real air of sort of self-awareness, or people are really being considerate, maybe. I know we talked a bit about intentionality and context, but I do think like the mindset or the tone of the conversation is that people are like quite curious to be mindful or a bit cautious. So that's something I've noticed anyway. Nice. So I want to get onto one more of these big challenges that we spoke about, and then we can move on to audience questions. There's a post that you put out that was I was in wholehearted agreement with recently, and it was about this idea of AI can help us do more, but should we do more just because we can? And does doing more always mean better outcomes and better decisions? From a marketing perspective, when ChatGPT came out, so much of the conversation was, I can create like 10 times as much content as I used to create before, but does it mean it's good content? Does it solve a problem for people? Should you do it? Are you going to be penalized for that in the long term if there is any implications for quality of the content? So yeah, I'd love to hear a bit more about why just doing more or creating more doesn't always mean good decisions. And then what sort of like the context, the wider context around people's perceptions about AI and doing more with it?
Yeah, I think the post that you're referring to here is one that I put out, I think, a few months ago, which was related to this, what we call algorithm aversion, which is a tendency for people to discount algorithmic recommendations. And some early findings suggest that people don't seem too happy to collaborate with AI, and they tend to discount AI's assistance, even if it's proven that it outperforms them. And even more, this aversion is stronger the more severe the consequences of the decision are, which is in a way a bit counterintuitive, because you would think that if we are being faced, if we're facing a decision that we are quite unsure about and the consequences are severe, for example, in, say, a medical field or a legal field, then you would want some impartial, unbiased super analyzer with a higher probability of maximizing the decision-making success to have its input. However, in these situations, people are a bit queasy about using algorithmic suggestions. So there's that. So this whole human plus AI collab that AI evangelists dream of is not quite as straightforward. Yeah, and when it comes to our little learning industry, when it comes to AI and learning, what's the right balance? I don't know. And I don't think that we have the answer yet, because as we talked before, we are just beginning to experiment with use cases. We're just beginning to create best practices, if any. Any data that we have is rudimentary. from pilot studies, and it's usually kept quite secret because they're the very separate, different organizations doing their own thing and not sharing. So these use cases and best practices have not been established. I don't know where the line is, but I know that one thing that's clear is within technology is that we shouldn't view AI as the automatic solution that's going to solve all our problems. It's a tool, and we need to be deliberate and thoughtful in how we use it.
Something that comes up so often when we talk about problem discovery or having impact through L&D is understanding the current perception of your L&D team or what learning means to the people in your company. And I wonder if that is actually a more sensible route in the short term. Like you said, the wider findings aren't there. There's no real one way to do it. So it is a better starting point to go to your people and say, what is your perception of using AI in your role? What would be any hesitations or reservations? Where would you see it making an impact? Is that a better way for people to go in the short term, is to just understand what it means to the people you want to use AI, and then basing your initial actions off of that perception and those findings?
Oh, definitely. And I think it's a bit of a meta-learning, meta-behavior change in the situation, because when we are creating these upskilling or change supporting interventions for the populations of people in our organizations, then we need to think about these things. We first do, or ideally we should do this research. We need to understand what's driving people, what their blockers are, and what their goals are, as we talked before. And then how do we solve this? What's the best use case, and what's the best remedy, and so on. So I think we need to apply the same mindset to ourselves, meaning that at first, we need to understand, as you say, what the perceptions in our team, in our L&D department, or any other department really, are about AI, how people are feeling about it. Do they feel threatened? Do they feel excited about it? And then seeing how to address those blockers to move them towards adoption. And some of the very interesting examples that I've seen in terms of how some organizations are doing it, they're creating these experimentation sandboxes where they, before they pilot, before they even deploy something at a larger scale, they get together, perhaps regularly, perhaps as a little hackathon type thing. They get together and see what are the use cases that we collectively can think of how AI can be useful for us in L&D.
That is really interesting, because I think that also feeds back into one of the ways L&D teams could use AI is to experiment and test things at scale. So, for example, if we want to test if a particular message lands with people, or if a series of prompts or pieces of content work with people, we could do it on a small scale, generate content with AI perhaps, with all the other caveats we spoke about, and then test if it works with people. So is that also part of the equation, is knowing where AI can help you test faster and build up like a bank of evidence that you could scale as well?
Yeah, definitely. But it's also a case of organizational culture, I guess, because these things that you're talking about, thinking whether we can test something quite fast and see what happens, that's something that we could have done even without AI, and that hadn't been adopted by a lot of organizations in terms of their ways of working. So it's the same thing with AI. There's no innovation there.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's true. It comes back to what you said earlier. We spoke about it's not a silver bullet or one size approach. So that's consistently coming through, which I love. Cool. We're going to move to some questions from the audience shortly, Egler. Just so I would give people a chance to put those in the chat, I want to tell you about the next episode of L&D Disrupt Live, because we're tackling another buzzword next time. That is learning science. So I'm going to be joined by Lauren Waldman, who you might know as the Learning Pirate, for a no BS chat about the brain and L&D. Tackling things like why L&D teams need to understand how the brain works, to learning science's role in upskilling and driving change. So that'll be on the 4th of October, same time, and I will put a link into the chat now for anyone who does want to join. And then we can move on to questions, Egler. So Christian asked, what if organizations do not communicate the goals and priorities properly from an L&D perspective? What impact does that have? So that's referring to what we spoke about earlier about clarity around where the organization is going, top-down use of a tool that we want people to adopt. So any thoughts on that communication and clarity?
You mean if the organization does not communicate goals, its organizational goals, its organizational AI strategy to L&D,
what effect it has?
Well, obviously, first of all, there is, I would say, that's just bad business practice strategically. It's L&D's goal is to support the business. You cannot just freestyle. Or it's not useful. It's a waste of resources to freestyle. So whatever you do, you need to support the business strategy. If the business does not communicate the strategy, it's very difficult to be effective in L&D as a business support function.
Another question from Harsh is, what are the top 2 to 3 tactical use cases of AI that you think every L&D pro should make the most of in their current role?
Tactical use cases. I'm not going to go into the exact prompts that may be useful, but I do think that obvious one is when it comes to first draft of anything. So if you think about the first draft of how to solve a let's pedal back. Two things that that come to mind now that I start thinking about it is, first, it can help you better understand your users from whatever insights you have of them and from whatever insights are available in the wider world wide web. So to better understand what could be the underlying reasons, because some of the time, I don't think it's very uncommon to not have a lot of access to data, to not have access to speak with people and to do proper user research, and especially if you're a vendor. So trying to put together the pieces of and bits and pieces of information that you have in a way that could help you get a better understanding of that persona that you're creating for is useful. And then, of course, what you do with it, perhaps you interact with it, and so on. That's up to your ingenuity. So first, this discovery bit that AI can help with, and then the other part is, okay, so now that we understand the problems that person might have, or their goals, and all of the things that we talked about earlier, what could be the solutions? I personally find generative AI a very useful tool for ideation, or let's put it as something that helps you start not from a blank page. So I would say that's another very useful tactical use case, because when it comes to actual content generation, that requires skill and prompt engineering for it to actually be of any use that you don't have to rewrite almost entirely. And when it comes to a higher level learning strategy, I think that's also right now I have seen some good outputs, but it's also at the suggestion stage rather than it being able to create a whole learning strategy for you. So yeah, the first two use cases earlier in the process, I think they're quite good and useful for learning.
I'll also link it in the post show email that I send out, but you put out a really good post a few months ago now covering some of these things at maybe a business level. And I remember one of them was skills mapping and I think business intelligence, like building this wider understanding of where your industry is and your market. So are they common ways you've seen AI used quite effectively as well?
Yeah. So the framework you're referring to is, so this is something that I came up with as I was thinking about how AI can be used in L&D and in learning in general, because the conversation is going pretty much everywhere, from how do you prompt it to create some copy for you, to all of this skills intelligence, we're going to tell people what role to join in the organization to reach their dreams. So everywhere in between. So what I was writing there for everyone's context is that there might be 4 levels of AI impact in L&D. So first is content production, both text and video and audio and whatever. Content production, so that's the obvious level. Then second is learning strategy, which is more about learning design and these more assisting people in creating effective learning interventions. Then a level up is things like skills intelligence. So that's the enterprise level use of AI. And the last one is business intelligence, which is about using AI to understand where learning interactions might be most impactful, and then to measure impact. So right now, most of the conversation is happening at the bottom content production level. There is some conversation interesting conversation and use cases happening at the learning design level. Skills intelligence is I think right now different people, like this is enterprise level applications, different people are involved in that. There are some very promising technologies and vendors that do this. So we'll see where it goes. And then the business intelligence level, the whole integrating learning with business insights, I think that's the holy grail. But I think all of you will agree that L&D has not been historically very effective in tapping into that, not least because there is a skill shortage in terms of data and people analytics. And there's also the whole problem of data infrastructure and how do we even make it usable for us.
Perfect. Another question from David in the chat. He said that AI today is very much analogous, I don't know this word, but similar to the early internet. If AI today is the equivalent to a basic static HTML page, what do you think the future of AI in L&D looks like tomorrow? I know you spoke a little bit about thinking 3 to 12 months, but what is the thoughts on that?
Oh God, I don't want to put myself on the record making predictions about where it's going in a few years. I think the generally speaking, right now we are thinking about AI as a reactive thing. We are giving it a prompt and it supports us, like either with an answer or if it's a more sophisticated agent that can help us perform a task, things like that. So that's reactive. I think where ideally or most usefully it could go is anticipatory. I guess that would be the word, where it anticipates what you need instead of you having to prompt it. But then we're going into more tricky ethical waters in terms of if it becomes something that advises you and suggests things to you proactively, then that means that it has a lot more access to data. It has a lot more access to actually pushing things to people instead of reacting to them, which is, I'm sure you can see how that's a minefield in terms of bias and quality of recommendations and how much we rely on these things across the business.
Perfect. Just while we give people a question to drop any, a second to drop any final questions in the chat, I also wanted to ask you more directly about something we spoke about earlier, but this mindset of focusing on problems to solve rather than focusing on tech. This is something I see in a wider context of people going out and looking for a particular tool, like I need a learning tool that has AI, as opposed to I need something that solves X, Y, and Z problem. So that mindset of solving problems, how important is that as we try and be more intentional with how we use AI?
I mean, that's the core of it, really. I think what AI does ultimately for learning is that it makes the conversations that we have been having for the last several years much more urgent. So we have been talking about being user-centric for a long while. We've been talking about what is our purpose, how do we serve people, how do we support their development or their immediate performance at work. But still, there's been this impetus to create or to turn to courses as the ultimate solution to a lot of it. Again, very different organizations, departments, people working there. So I'm not trying to paint everyone with the same brush, but these definitely have been the conversations. So I feel that AI makes it that much more important that we become user-centric, because the opportunity cost of not being that is increasing. Because imagine that right now in organization A, someone has some sort of a problem, kind of sort of perceived. People don't really investigate exactly where it's coming from. They create some content, they give them a course, and that's pretty much all there is to it, right? And then you have this organization B, where their learning function is much more plugged in. It's much more user-centric, exploring what the problem is, targeting the solution, which can be a collection of interventions, a holistic program, or maybe performance support, whatever. We have this entire toolbox, you know what I'm talking about. And imagine that these two people later meet and compete in the job market. So the opportunity cost of not being user-centric actually affects people's opportunities, both at the company and in their careers outside their current company.
Perfect. That is the perfect note to end on, because it's the real mindset we need. And it also talks about how this affects people individually, as opposed to just looking at this as a wider company thing. So Egla, I'm going to put your LinkedIn profile link in the chat now for anyone who's not already following you. Some of the content you're putting out about AI and L&D is the best and most interesting and thought-provoking that I'm seeing. So do make sure you go and connect with Egla. Other than that, just a massive thank you to everyone for joining us today. Like I said, you can subscribe to L&D Disrupt wherever you get your podcasts. Check out previous episodes, future ones. And Egla, just a massive thank you to you as well for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.